Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 45 degrees and wet. Today is Monday, December 5th, 2011. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The city of Sitka now has a master plan for improvements to parking and traffic flow at Harrigan Centennial Hall, a plan that may or may not include the existing boat launch ramp behind the building. For a process that has been contentious at times, particularly over the perceived loss of green space, last Thursday's assembly deliberation boiled down to the boat ramp. The basic redesign of the area has been through a stakeholder committee process. The boat ramp survived that process, but Public Works Director Michael Harmon described its use as limited. That touched a nerve with Assemblymember Phyllis Hackett, who is an island dweller and regular harbor user.
I just want to know that that's still in the works to be worked out, that we're not voting, we're not saying that what very limited access means is that that we are absolutely cutting off the opportunity for somebody to go back with a truck and a trailer and load their boat. I mean, put their boat in the water. I just don't want to, I mean, it may not end up being that way, but I want to know that that conversation has not ended. And I'm not getting that from you, Michael.
Member Tor Christensen shared that view, perhaps even more strongly. His support for the plan pivoted on whether the ramp would be included. He had not been appeased by alternatives proposed by Public Works for a new boat launch elsewhere.
That ramp is a deal breaker for me. If it's not in there, I'm voting against this and fighting it tooth and nail every step of the way. Because, number one, that's the only ramp that's deep enough to launch a lot of boats. The other ramps are too shallow. And you can't get a bigger, your deeper hole, deeper boat, you can't get it in the water because it's too shallow. Second, it's protected. And it's close to the harbor, which makes it nice. I mean, that is a very desirable to have ramp.
Mike Reif took a more moderate view, but not wanting to miss an opportunity maybe to do a little better by ramp users.
I can't begin to say whether it's a deal breaker or maker for me, because if you pick another location that actually has places for trailers, places to park, gets the right grade, because I'm not impressed with that location on a southeast wind. The waves that build up there, it is not an easy ramp to get on and off with the winds that are frequently coming in there during the winter months. And so I think we can even find a better location. And so I'm just an open mind.
All of these comments were directed at Public Works Director Harmon, who stressed the committee process and downplayed his role in any final decision-making. He told the assembly he considered the ramp to be limited primarily because of the lack of maneuvering room for vehicles. The master plan calls for most of the currently paved area at the top of the ramp to be converted to green space. He acknowledged that many details were still open for discussion, including the ramp and changes inside Harrigan Centennial Hall. He said that the adoption of the master plan would allow his department to begin the process of design and construction. The assembly consented unanimously. The survivor of a 2010 Coast Guard helicopter crash has his first day in court this week. Lieutenant Lance Leone is expected to appear Wednesday before a military judge in Juneau. The Coast Guard has brought charges against Leone for the loss of a Coast Guard helicopter and the deaths of two of its crew members. He is not being charged in the death of the chopper's pilot. The chopper and its crew were based in Sitka, where community members who support Leone have taken up a collection for his legal defense. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Lieutenant Lance Leone is facing three charges from the Coast Guard. One says he failed to navigate away from charted hazards. Another charges him with the destruction of the chopper. Those are both misdemeanors. The third charge consists of two felony counts. It says Leone negligently caused the deaths of Petty Officer First Class Adam Hoke and Petty Officer Second Class Brett Banks. Leone is not facing charges in connection with the death of the helicopter's commander, Lieutenant Sean Kruger. Wednesday's proceeding is called an Article 32 hearing. It's similar to a grand jury hearing in civilian court, but with a few differences.
Unlike a civilian grand jury, the Article 32 is an adversary hearing. The accused can be there generally. Well, not only can be there, but he can be there and be represented by counsel.
Lieutenant Colonel John Farr is retired from the Army's Judge Advocate General Corps and is now an attorney in private practice in Anchorage. He says in addition to Leone's ability to be present, the hearing will include a full airing of the evidence against him.
It's a tactical decision like any other whether the accused would actually testify. But the military system has all the protections of the civilian system. In fact, it resembles it in more ways than it differs from it.
Instead of a panel of grand jurors, Leone's case will be heard before an investigating officer, in this case Captain Andrew Norris, a Coast Guard judge advocate stationed at the U.S. Naval War College in Rhode Island. Chief Petty Officer Kip Wadlow is a spokesman for the U.S. Coast Guard in Alaska.
Once the evidence has been presented, he will then write his recommendation and provide that to Admiral Ostabo, and Admiral Ostabo will then determine the next course of action to take.
Wadlow is referring to Rear Admiral Thomas Ostabo, commander of the Coast Guard district that encompasses all of Alaska. Ostabo can decide to drop the charges, handle the matter internally, or send the case on to a court-martial, which would put Leone on trial. While all of this is happening, friends in Sitka have established a legal defense fund for Leone through the law office of Pearson and Hansen. Mike Finn is one of those friends. The charges were filed on September 30th, and Finn says the time since then has been frustrating.
It's hard to get answers right now. There's not a lot of people that want to talk about it that can talk about it. There's a lot of people that want to help that can't. And so it's just one of those things that I feel a personal interest in wanting to get the word out and get the proper word out and tell people, you know, some of the things that are going on with this case that aren't being aired.
Finn says he has many concerns, including a feeling that Leone is being singled out for punishment by a command that's concerned about its safety image. And he says the charges against Leone have changed his view of the Coast Guard as an institution. His 11-year-old son has shown an interest in joining, but Finn says he won't support the decision if Leone is convicted. That's a different reaction than the one held by Leone's father, George.
I still love them. I love their mission. It is upsetting to know what's happening at present, but I believe he will be rescued and vindicated because my son didn't do anything wrong.
George Leone says his son was questioned in the aftermath of the accident and that the investigation appeared to be over. He says Lance Leone was about to get the green light to fly again.
He got a call from in Washington that his training's been canceled.
The charges were filed not long after. George Leone says he's been awed by the support the community of Sitka showed in the aftermath of the crash and the support from the Coast Guard. That included a hospital visit from Admiral Robert Papp, the Coast Guard commandant. Papp is the highest-ranking officer in the Coast Guard, and when the charges were filed, George Leone called him at home. He says he didn't get to talk to Papp, but he spoke to his wife.
So what did I want to tell Papp when I called him? I just wanted to say, you know, thank you for all the love and support, but I want to understand what's going on, and please stop. How can they do a tremendous investigation? They spent thousands of man hours, put together a report, and they said, Lance didn't do anything wrong. They hit some wires out there, whatever. And now to come up with this, when he got the green light to go flying, you're slapping the face of all the people that did this investigative report. They said there's nothing wrong with it. Now, where is this coming from?
George Leone might not have received an answer to that question, where is this coming from? But after Wednesday's hearing, he and his son, Lieutenant Lance Leone, might have a clearer idea of where it's going. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
You can hear a longer interview with Lance Leone's father, George, on our website, kcaw.org. A behavioral health program in Wrangell that takes its participants into the wilderness has shed several employees and lost its director. KSDK's Charlotte Duren reports.
In the past 2 weeks, the Crossings program has seen 8 layoffs, as well as the resignation of former program director Stephen Perzunka. In the midst of these changes, AICS facilities manager Steve Helgeson has been hired to take over as the new Crossings program director. He says what they're dealing with is regulation changes coming from Crossing's main funding source, Medicaid.
What we are doing in order to make sure that the Crossings program remains vital and sustainable is to take measures to bring its budget for next year into balance, taking into consideration our best estimate of what those new regulations, the effect of those new regulations on our revenue.
As for the recent layoffs in administration, there was 4 full-time positions laid off, 3 full-time positions reallocated, and 1 full-time position moved to seasonal. And for the Crossing shop, 4 part-time seasonal positions were eliminated, and 1 position was reallocated. Along with the layoffs, Helgeson says they are trying to reorganize how the program is run.
So we've had to do a number of things, and a number of them have been difficult. We've had to eliminate some positions. We have consolidated some departments of the Crossings Program within the larger organization, and we've made cuts across the board in Crossings expenditures in order to bring its budget into balance. And that's the only way that we can keep the program sustainable and viable. It has to operate with a balanced budget.
Helgeson says the layoffs were not easy, but says they're necessary to make sure the organization and program stay afloat in the next fiscal year. He says at this time, AICS is working on a plan to incorporate the Crossings program and its employees into the wider AICS organization. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Charlotte Duran.
And a clarification to a story on Sitka's electric surcharge, which aired Friday at this time. A surcharge of 3 cents on Sitka's base electric rate of 9 cents is an increase of 33%, not the 22% reported in the story. However, the overall impact of the surcharge on a typical utility bill in Sitka will be 22%. Here's an exchange between Assemblymember Terry Blake and Jay Sweeney last Thursday that might help explain the situation.
How does this translate into the average, in worst case scenario, the average monthly increase in the electric, only electric portion, monthly for the average household resident? What would you guess, percentage-wise?
About 22%. I did a calculation, and again, my estimation is on an average household using 1,500 kilowatt hours per month. And at 1,500 kilowatt hours per month is about a 22% increase.
Again, the actual electric surcharge is 33%. The surcharge will be in place for a year, as reported. Some weather forecast today for Sitka and Port Alexander: calls for rain, highs around 47, south winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, then decreasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour in the late afternoon. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.